KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the U.S. Treasury Department this morning has announced new sanctions on Iran. We discuss the state of U.S.-Iran relations and what all this means for the Iran nuclear deal. Then at 9:30, Reddit, the online forum and self-proclaimed front page of the internet, announced this week it was banning two of its alt-right discussion boards. The move comes after Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian posted an open letter criticizing President Trump's immigration order. Ohanian joins us in studio. That's all next on Forum. We get started after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Tensions between the U.S. and Iran escalated yesterday when President Trump said nothing is off the table in dealing with the country, including military action. Today, the U.S. imposed new sanctions on the country. The move comes after White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn said Wednesday that the administration is officially putting Iran on notice after the test launch of a missile on Sunday. We look at these latest developments, where U.S.-Iran relations are likely to go under President Trump, and what effect it could have on the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Joining me now is Phil Ewing. He is National Security Editor at NPR. Good morning, Phil Ewing.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. First, can you tell us what are the new sanctions? What are they targeting?
These affect about two dozen businesses and individuals in Iran and other places, including Lebanon and China. And they follow, as you mentioned, this test firing of a ballistic missile, which the Trump administration says was a provocation, and also follows some other transgressions with which Iran has been involved. And it's a favorite tactic that we remember from the past administration, that of Barack Obama, using economic pressure on businesses, individuals, entities, and a government to try and coerce it in some way. We don't know exactly what might be next here. As you described, the president said nothing is off the table, and we also heard White House officials say this week that if Iran takes additional actions or provocations against the United States, it will respond, as it said, appropriately. So what that means is anyone's guess at this point.
The acting director of the Treasury unit that's in charge of sanctions said that they do not violate the international nuclear deal that was reached back in 2015. Why are they treading carefully after such tough talk this week and also Trump's tough campaign talk on the campaign trail when he talked about ripping up the deal because it was such a bad deal?
That's a great question. Yes, from what we understand, that's true. This was an agreement reached between Iran, the United States, and the other European powers and Russia over the nuclear program, but it did not encompass its aspirations to build some nuclear, or I should say ballistic missile weapons. What I don't know and what hasn't become clear yet is what the next steps could be for President Trump as regards that nuclear deal. You mentioned, of course, that he was quite critical about it when he was a presidential candidate. Now that he's been elected and his new administration is in charge, we don't know, and it's possible that they don't know exactly what their next steps might be in terms of addressing it. They could choose to leave it in place and hope that people forget that criticism and just focus on these other ways that they can try and punish Iran. Or, in fact, they may be working on a plan inside the president's team to try and roll it back or try and renegotiate it. It's still early days, and we don't know exactly what they might have in mind.
How has Iran reacted to the new sanctions? Have we heard from the leadership there?
We have not heard since the announcement this morning, but overnight, Iranian hardliners there said they were not going to be deterred by this tough talk from Washington, that they would continue to act in whatever ways they saw fit around the region. Iran has a lot of irons in the fire around the Middle East. It has proxy fighters that are in Iraq helping fight the Islamic State. They're in Syria fighting the Islamic State. It has proxy fighters in Yemen that are fighting in the civil war there. And so there are lots of things that it is doing, and we have every indication so far that it plans to continue doing those things.
Well, Phil Ewing, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Phil Ewing, National Security Editor for NPR. Joining us now is Abbas Milani. He's Director of Iranian Studies at Stanford University and a professor by courtesy in the Division of Stanford Global Studies. He's a research fellow at Hoover Institution, and he's the author of the book The Shah. Good morning to you, Abbas Milani.
Good morning to you and to your listeners.
Thank you for being here. We heard Phil Ewing talk about who the targets were of these particular sanctions. I asked him the question about how the administration is being careful, it appears, to not violate the Iran nuclear deal that was reached in 2015. Do you have any thoughts on the sanctions and their effect and why the administration is behaving in the way that it is?
Well, it's behaving this way because they want to send clearly a very strong message that there's a new sheriff in town, that rules of engagement are about to change. And this verbal escalation, I think, is a continuation of an earlier virtual confrontation when Iranian boats approached the U.S. naval ship, and instead of warning them, the U.S. Shot at them. The Obama administration had tried to avoid any kind of confrontation of that spirit. So it has been escalating, but the level of rhetorical escalation in the last 48 hours has been rather remarkable.
And what effect do you think it will have in terms of Iran? How do you think they're going to react to this?
Well, I don't think it's going to fundamentally change their behavior. I think they're trying to be a little more cautious. I think they realize that they don't know what the Trump administration will do. I don't think anybody knows. I think, as your setup piece indicated, candidate Trump had said that he would tear the agreement the first day, but he hasn't, and I think it's a wise decision not to do it. And this unilateral sanctions by the United States, experience over the last 20 years has shown, really doesn't deter Iran from its shenanigans in the region. The only thing that brought Iran seriously to the negotiation was when there was an international sanction supported by the UN. And this one, like the past sanctions, is more symbolic than actual effective policy tool.
You talk about how Iran will likely tread carefully around all of this. The latest round of tough talk was set off by the ballistic missile test on Sunday. Why would Iran do this at all when they knew it would be seen as a provocation?
Because just as there are people in Washington who want to provoke Iran into doing something stupid, there are many stupid people in Iran who want to provoke the world and who want to provoke the United States. There are many people in Iran who, particularly their radical wings of the IRGC, who are very much against this deal. They have been trying to get out of the deal. They've been trying to scuttle it. They say it's the most shameful one-sided deal Iran has ever signed. So for them to do provocative things, the them that I'm referring to are the radicals, is part of their nature. The other thing that I think we have to remember is that all of this is happening in the context of upcoming elections in Iran. Mr. Rouhani is very much under pressure to maybe not run. The radicals have been creating a great bit of controversy about his brother and his alleged corruption. So there is an effort, I think, by the IRGC and the conservatives to consolidate power, and part of that consolidation is confronting the United States this way and provoking it.
And as you're saying, it has benefits to both sides, right? You know, Trump is under pressure to appear tough on Iran, especially if he doesn't rip up the nuclear deal as he's threatened to do. And as you say, Rouhani is facing a tough election. Let me invite our listeners to join the conversation. This is a half-hour segment, so the time to ask your questions is now. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. What are your questions or concerns about the latest development on these sanctions, the actions this week, the trading of threats between U.S. and Iran, and U.S.-Iran relations under President Trump? You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, post them on Facebook, on Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. I think, Abbas Milani, what people are really wanting to know right now is, with the actors that we have in place now, how significantly, you know, when we say that it'll be a tougher administration on Iran, how significantly will that shift and what could it look like? So, you know, we've been hearing about how the animus for Iran is deep with National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, even with Defense Secretary James Mattis. what role do you think they will have in shaping how the U.S. treats Iran?
Well, I think those two have a very different form of hard line on Iran. Mr. Flynn's book, if you read it, is full of rather incredible claims about Iran as being essentially the mastermind, the Satan of the entire forces arrayed against the United States. I mean, it gives it a rather remarkable, powerful role. Secretary Mattis is, I think, much more reasonable in his opposition. He is opposed to the deal. He is very tough on Iran. But his language when he was here at Hoover, I've heard him talk many times. His language, although against Iran, is much more reasonable. If you read the book that Mr. Flynn has written, and I read it and I was rather shocked by it, that can't but get the United States into trouble because after words come actions. If such an important person in the Trump administration has such a view of Iran as being the center of all that is against the United States, from even ISIS to what's happening in Latin America, then we are heading for rough waters. I hope Mattis and I hope wiser voices in the Republican Party, people like Condi Rice, people like Secretary Shultz, can prevail on the administration to take a more prudent, long-term view. Iran doesn't have a military solution. The problem of Iran does not have a military solution. The people of Iran are innocent hostages to these radical fringe elements who every day want to provoke the West. Prudent policy, in my view, takes the long-term strategic perspective that a democratic Iran, made more democratic by the people of Iran, is the only long-term solution for the region, for the United States, for Israel, for Saudi Arabia, and for the world.
Well, then, given the players that we have in place, you know, could this escalate into a military conflict, in your view? Do you think that's where this is headed?
Well, the possibility exists. As I said, words eventually translate into action. But I think neither side really wants a military confrontation in spite of the tough rhetoric. Mr. Trump has indicated, President Trump has indicated he doesn't want to get involved in another military confrontation in the Middle East. And, you know, Iran is a major force. Iran is not a small country. Iran is three times the size of Iraq. It has a military force. As your setup piece indicated, it is involved in proxy wars in Lebanon, in Syria, in Yemen.
Yes.
It has, by its own account, 100,000 missiles in Lebanon alone. So it is not a force that can be pushed around that easily. And some people in Iran crave that confrontation. And some people in Washington also, I think the only way to solve the problem is, as they say in Mr. Flynn's book, a regime change.
But who would join us if we got into a full-blown war? It doesn't seem like there's much of an appetite for that in the international community.
Absolutely. I don't think they would. And I don't think the Trump administration's effort to have better relations with Russia is going to work in that case either. Russia is right now on the march in the Middle East, and it's on the march in the Middle East with the help of Iran. So, as I said, the rhetoric is easy to mouth, but to think about this strategically is going to take a lot more serious thinking and a lot less sort of impulsive reaction. The President of the United States, in my view, it's very strange to go from a provocation, a missile provocation that Iran has done in the past, for the administration to go from this, the White House spokesperson speaking on it, then in the middle of that talk, the National Security Advisor comes and delivers a tough warning that nobody really knows what it means. Iran has been unnoticed. Iran has been under watch for 25 years. And then the president, within 24 hours, issues another rather harsh threat. And they need to modulate this a little bit so that it doesn't escalate out of control.
Well, let's hear from our listener, Samira, in the Bay Area. Hi, Samira.
Hi. Thank you for having Dr. Milani on the show this morning. And Dr. Milani, thank you for your time. My question is in particular in regards to the Iranian government. Here as a, Iranian national, I pretty much grew up here, and I know a lot of Iranians who come here for the freedom and for what America has to offer. And I know that Iran is on the list, on the terrorist list, because of the acts of the government and not the people. Dr. Milani, my question in particular is, do you foresee that this ban will have any negative effect on the government of Iran, or is it just going to punish the people who try to leave for a better future?
Well, I think one of the gifts that the Iranian regime gave to the Trump administration was this provocative act, because before this provocative act, the discussion, and much of the discussion, was about the ban and about how it is against the American spirit, it might be against the Constitution. And now, suddenly, all of that has gone to second page. The Iranian regime is actually using the ban for its own propaganda purposes. They have announced, for example, that anybody who was accepted to a top 20 university in the United States and is not going to be allowed to come in, they will give them free education at the best university, engineering university in Iran. Sharif University is where many of our Stanford students come from. Iran has already claimed that they will be accepted there. Iran has announced that entrepreneurs who can't get into Iran, innovators who are being pushed out of Iran, can come back to Iran, and they will give them an interest-free loan. Nobody believes the regime because it has lied so often in the past, but this has been a bonanza for them. The ban has been a bonanza. I'm against the ban from all of these countries because I don't think that helps secure the United States. But in the case of Iran, it's particularly egregious, as it is against Iraq and the rest of the countries. But the Iranian people are as much hostages to this regime and to its provocations as everybody else. And to put them in the same league as with the regime and ban them and make it impossible for the Iranian dissidents to come to this country, Iranian artists to come to this country, Iranian students to come to this country, is very counterproductive and against the very facts of who has caused the greatest terror threat to Europe and to the United States.
Well, let me thank Samira for the call. Charles writes, apparently Iran tested a cruise missile, not a ballistic missile, and this is not in violation of any UN resolution. That's not to say this is a good thing one way or another, but Iran is perfectly within its right to do so. That's really been the question here, right, as to whether or not this was a violation, a provocative violation of the UN Security Council resolution as the U.S. claims.
Well, I think the legal opinion about this and the scholarly opinion about this is divided. Most people I have talked to who are legal scholars and who have studied the UN resolution say that this is a defiant act against that, because that resolution doesn't ban Iran. It invites Iran. It encourages Iran not to engage in provocative acts and not to test missiles that could carry a nuclear load. Iran claims this is not is not designed to carry a nuclear load. Nobody, of course, believes them, but they say we are within our rights. And many people think Russia, for example, amongst them, that has a veto power in the UN. Russia is on record saying that missile tests are not against the letter of the law. They're unhelpful, but they're not against the letter of the UN resolution.
And let's hear now from Phil in Oakland. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Professor Milani. It's just always great to hear your perspective. I really appreciate it. You know, a couple years ago, I read a profile of Qasem Soleimani, who's a major player. I think he's the head of the Quds Force, arguably the architect of the intelligence strategy that completely outmaneuvered the U.S. during the Iraq War. Do we have any way of knowing where someone like him, where he stands on a direct confrontation with the U.S.? It seems like he would be a pretty important person in deciding how they choose to engage with us.
Thanks, Phil.
Yes, I think he would be a very critical person because, as you said, he is the commander of the Quds Brigade, which is the arm of the Iranian regime throughout all of this region. He is the one who was very much the de facto viceroy of Iraq. He ran a lot of the actions by the Shiites in Iraq. So he will be a very important force. We still haven't heard from him directly, but the IRGC has declared repeatedly that we don't consider a test of the missile a breach of the agreement, and we are going to increase our defensive preparedness. We are going to increase our deterrence. So my sense is that he's much in line with what the official line of the IRGC and of the regime is. But if push comes to shove, I think you're absolutely right. He's going to be one of the key players in deciding both strategy and tactic. And he has proven to be a very wily, capable, brutal commander.
Well, Phil, thank you for the question. Sean writes, with Trump's comments that Iran nearly collapsed until Obama threw them a lifeline, it's become pretty clear that this really has nothing to do with nuclear weapons and everything to do with ensuring that Iran fails as a country and that the Iranian people suffer. These are the GOP's real goals. Let's hear now from Ardef in San Francisco. Hi, Ardef.
Thank you so very much for taking my call. My question is that Dr. Milani, so we know that Ayatollah Khamenei is old. So if he died soon, or we don't know, but if he died in a few years or 5 years or 10 years, so do you think the Iran regime will collapse because he is so powerful and he controls many things in Iran? And what do you think about that? And also, what's your exact idea about Iran's future? So what do you think if you recommend one strategy for Iran's future, what would be that? Thank you.
Ardef, thanks. We have just a minute left, Abbas Milani.
Well, I think the question of succession is very critical. The person that is now in line to potentially succeed Khamenei when he goes to meet his maker is someone far more radical than him, someone called Raisi. He is complicit in the murder of about 3,800 innocent prisoners in 1988. In terms of the future of Iran, unless Iran gets involved in a military confrontation, I'm very optimistic about the future of Iran because I think the majority of Iranian people, the youth, the women's movement, want a better, more democratic Iran. And gradually, I hope they will make it because that will ensure a better future for everybody.
Well, Numbe tweets, our reactionary president is about to get us in a bloody war if we as citizens stay silent. I'm very concerned. Abbas Milani, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Abbas Milani, Director of Iranian Studies at Stanford University and a professor by courtesy in the Division of Stanford Global Studies. After the break, we talk with Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohaney. Join us. This is Forum.